Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Welcome to another TGIF edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody is off on a badly needed vacation. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you my opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day. And let me thank in advance our program's number one producer and engineer, Todd. Thank you, sir. Well, let's get started with the market report. It was a stark day in the markets on the second day of trading of the new decade. I guess you can say that the Santa rally may be dead in the risk markets, but it's alive and well in the precious metal markets. Gold spiked today. It's up just shy of $20, 1.3%, at just below $1,550. Silver, interestingly, is down a penny to 1809 off its high of the day of 1822. Platinum ended the day flat after being up $10 earlier. Palladium's up $24, 1.2% at 1990. Oil jumped on the U.S. drone strike. We'll be talking about that a little bit more in a minute. West Texas crude futures, let's see, they were up substantially. Bear with me, up over $23. I beg your pardon, those are gold futures, up 3%, about $2 at $63 a barrel. Gold futures, by the way, up 23 bucks, 1.5% at over $15.51. Not surprisingly, the CBOE VIX Volatility Index shot up about, at one point it was over 10%, now at about 1350. Melody also likes to mention the Fear and Greed Index, which answers the question, what's the predominant emotion of the stock market right now? The Fear and Greed Index is a sentiment indicator that tells if equities are undervalued or overvalued. The logic behind it is that too much greed can push stock prices beyond their beyond their fair price, while too much fear can cause stocks to slip well below their intrinsic price, as most traders typically don't act rationally in the short term. Fear and Greed Index uses seven indicators to capture the market's fear and greed and measures the market sentiment based on a couple of emotions on a daily, weekly, monthly, an annual basis. Those metrics are individually measured on a scale of 0 to 100, with lower numbers indicating fear, higher numbers pointing to greed. Then they're weighted equally to calculate the fear and greed index. The index is a great tool to help investors and traders get an idea of when it's time to enter and perhaps exit the markets. When this index is trading near its recent extreme lows, it hints that a significant bottom in the market is just on the horizon. The index should be interpreted with the help of technical analysis to improve your entry or exit signals. But it's also possible to use the index to figure out when the market is overbought. But at least historically, the indicator is less useful to predict significant highs. So there you go. For those of you who didn't know how the Fear and Greed Index is calculated and used, you know now know a little bit more. What's today's index? It's showing extreme greed at 94. In the paper markets, U.S. and all global stocks except the European FTSE based in London were down today. In the U.S., the S&P 500 was down 0.7%, 32.34 and change. The Dow Jones down 234, about 0.8%. 28,634 and change. The NASDAQ, the tech-heavy NASDAQ, down about 71. Again, about 0.8% to 9,020.77. U.S. dollar index, which had been down earlier, ended up about 0.04% at 96. 0.88. So it does look like Santa has flown the stock market coop. In U.S. Treasuries, all major maturity yields were also down today, which means the prices of bills, T-bills, and bonds themselves were up. The bellwether 10-year yield was down 0.092 to 1.79%. The 2-year is down 0.046 at 1.53. And the long-term 30-year note down 0.93 at 2.247. And I think that will do it for today's market report. Now, our weekly blog is out as we speak. You can sign up for our blog and weekly American Survival newsletter on our website, dgscoins.com. Today's blog is about the violence and volatility driving today's market moves. Precious metals and other safe haven assets, as we mentioned, rallied today after the U.S. killing of a top Iranian general sparked fears of a broader conflict that could disrupt energy production and drag down the global economy further than it did last year. Gold spiked, as I mentioned, just shy of 1.3%, $20, closing in on its 6-year high reached just a few months ago in September. Investors flew the equity market to safe assets after a pre-dawn drone strike ordered by the president killed Iran's top general, Qassem Soleimani, at the Baghdad International Airport. The attack also killed top Iraqi militia commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, one of Soleimani's chief advisors. Soleimani was regarded as the second most powerful figure in Iran after Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khomeini. His death raised concerns over potential retaliation from the Iranian forces. Iran has vowed harsh revenge. Pardon me. Now, Major General Qassem Soleimani led the powerful Quds Force of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. He had survived several assassination attempts by Western, Israeli, and Arab agencies over the past 20 years. He was killed along with several other officials from the Iraqi militias backed by Tehran when an American MQ-9 Reaper drone, unmanned, fired missiles into a convoy that was leaving the airport. Quite vivid photographs of the burned out vehicles served as a reminder of the brute force of these drones. Now, Soleimani was the architect of nearly every significant operation by Iranian intelligence and military forces over the past two decades. And his death was a staggering blow for Iran at a time of widespread rising geopolitical conflict. Iran's foreign minister tweeted that the U.S. bears responsibility for all consequences of, quote, rogue adventurism, while the Fars news agency reported that Iran's top security body will meet soon to discuss Tehran's response. And so we know one thing, ladies and gentlemen, uncertainty will certainly rule over the next few days in global markets and, of course, on busy streets around the world. Chief economist at MUFG, Chris Rupke, said it's impossible to know what comes next. Markets don't even know what they're waiting for to signal the all-clear siren. Well, the riskier equities, as I mentioned, sold off when markets opened this morning. And the overnight attack authorized by Trump was a dramatic escalation in a shadow war in the Middle East between Iran and the U.S. and our allies, particularly Israel and Saudi Arabia. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the strike aimed to disrupt an imminent attack that would have endangered Americans in the Middle East. Democratic critics said the Republican president had raised the risk of more violence in an already dangerous region. Now, Pompeo, in two separate TV interviews, declined to discuss most details of the alleged threat, except to say it was an intelligence-based assessment that drove the decision to target Soleimani. This morning's strike followed a sharp increase in long-running U.S.-Iranian hostilities last week when pro-Iranian militia attacked the U.S. embassy in Iraq after a U.S. air raid on the Kataib Hezbollah militia. Iraq's prime minister said that with today's attack, Washington had violated a deal for keeping U.S. troops in his country. Israel had put its army on high alert, and U.S. allies in Europe, Britain, France, and Germany, all voiced concerns about an escalation in tensions. The U.S. embassy in Baghdad urged all American citizens to depart Iraq immediately. Dozens of U.S. citizens working for foreign oil companies in the southern city of Basra were seen leaving the country. An Iraqi official said the evacuations would not affect output and exports. Iran's Ayatollah Khomeini said harsh revenge awaited the criminals, his term, who killed Soleimani, and said his death would double resistance against the U.S. and Israel. He called for 3 days of national mourning and appointed Soleimani's deputy, Brigadier General Ismail Ghani, to replace him as Quds Force head. Trump critics called the operation reckless. One of them, former Vice President Joe Biden, said President Trump just tossed a stick of dynamite into a tinderbox. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani said the assassination would make Iran more decisive in resisting the U.S., while the Revolutionary Guard said anti-U.S. forces would exact revenge across the Muslim world. Hundreds, if not thousands, of Iranians could be seen marching toward Khomeini's compound in central Tehran to convey their condolences. Iraqi Prime Minister Adel Abdulmahdi condemned the killings as an act of aggression that breached Iraq's sovereignty and said would lead to war. Israel has long seen Soleimani as a major threat, and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu defended the U.S. bombing Russia's Ministry of Defense, on the other hand, called the killing a short-sighted step that would lead to unnecessary escalations in the region. Meanwhile, aside from the occasional selling of profits, especially by gold-backed ETFs and market timers, precious metal investors should see gold and silver prices seeking refuge from this ramped-up volatility in the coming days, if not weeks, by scurrying up the proverbial beanstalk. So don't wait for precious metal prices to climb further. Consider strongly adding more to your portfolio now to lock in to today's prices. On a lighter but still serious note, in the few short weeks leading up to the holidays, Americans went all out on spending. No surprise there. It will take much longer, however, to pay it off. The surge in spending last month may have contributed to the best holiday shopping season in years. Through Christmas Eve, MasterCard says holiday retail sales rose 3.4%, while online sales jumped a record 18%. However, the average American racked up about $1,325 in holiday debt over that same period. That's according to Magnify Money's annual post-holiday debt survey. That's a pleasant thing. From gift buying to travel expenses and other related holiday costs, holiday debt rose 8% this year and was up a whopping 34% from when the survey was first conducted in 2015. Further, more than three-quarters of those polled said they won't pay off their balances in full by the end of January, which means they'll also start racking up interest charges on those bills. Excuse me for a second, please. Thank you. More than half the shoppers, 58%, said they'll pay off the debt in at least 3 months. About 15% said they'll only make the minimum payments. Now, from month to month, credit cards are one of the most expensive ways to borrow money. Card rates now stand at 4% on average, down only slightly from a record high of 17.85 this past July. Now, if you only made the minimum payments on a $1,325 balance, it would take more than 5 years to pay it off, while racking up, listen to this, more than $600 in interest charges. And that's assuming an interest rate of 15%. Still, many Americans continue to take on ever-increasing amounts of borrowing. As credit card balances creep higher and Americans' confidence in their ability to pay their bills declines, adding on even more high-interest debt is certainly a slippery slope. Altogether, consumer debt in the U.S. now exceeds $4 trillion. Yikes. Adding to the bad news, farmers are stuck with fields full of weather-damaged corn in North Dakota. That's a crop they planted after the U.S.-China trade war killed their soybean market. Many don't know yet what crops they'll plant next season among a host of dicey options. In Texas, Kansas, and Colorado, farmers are weighing whether they should plant fewer acres of corn and more sorghum instead, even though China has all but stopped buying it. Sorghum, that is. That's because sorghum costs about half as much as corn to plant, which appeals to farmers wary of investing too much for an uncertain return. As the U.S. farm economy reels from the worst harvest in decades after nearly 2 years of the trade war, U.S. grain growers are struggling to decide what crops might keep them in business. It's a sad story out there, ladies and gentlemen. President Trump announced last month that China had agreed to double its pre-trade war purchases of U.S. agricultural products over the next 2 years as part of a Phase One trade deal. And that brought little comfort to U.S. farmers because China still hasn't confirmed that commitment or signed any deal. North Dakota farmer Justin Sherlock said, President Trump said that we're all going to need to buy bigger tractors. He added, I don't think many farmers are going to invest much money until we see that this is a done deal and a long-term deal. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, the music means it's time for a break. Please stay tuned. We'll be back after these few short, important messages.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. We're on the web at dgscoins.com. That's dgscoins.com. Or again, call us toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. Let's talk briefly, anyway, about some, I guess you call this good news. Lowe's is looking to hire at least 53,000 people across the country ahead of the spring season. That's the home improvement retailer's busiest time of year. Now, that's less than Lowe's goals for a total of 65,000 workers in 2019, of which 50,000 were seasonal hires. Lowe's said it will begin holding hiring events in all of its more than 1,700 U.S. stores next week to fill both part and full-time roles over the next few months. Those open positions include cashiers, stockers, and loaders in its stores, as well as merchandising associates who hang out on the floors to assist customers. All workers are eligible to participate in Lowe's quarterly bonus program. In addition to their pay, employees receive a 10% store discount. Lowe's said that in 2019, about 50% of seasonal hires were converted to permanent jobs. That's pretty significant. Lowe's in 2019 pivoted its focus for new hires toward filling additional tech-related jobs. CEO Marvin Ellison, who joined Lowe's from JCPenney the year before in 2018, called that out as one of the company's weakness. Ellison is also trying to cut costs at the company. Lowe's making its hiring plans in the midst of what's still a tight labor market in the U.S. Unemployment remains near record lows, and that makes it more competitive for companies to find talent. Lowe's larger rival Home Depot also ramps up hiring ahead of the spring. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's now time for our first Brevity is Gold for the new year. Actually, because we found that the vast majority of our Brevity is Golden segments are not so brevity in nature, we're hereby officially renaming the segment Levity is Golden, in the hopes that we can add a little bit of levity to your day. If you took the sum of political knowledge available at the end of 2018 and projected the course in 2019, certainly the resulting spaghetti models could have gone in millions of directions. We know the political pundits lack steady reliability, scientific methodology, or real-life consequences for their predictions, but just how wide was the gulf between what actually happened last year and the paths imagined by our pundits and politicians at the end of 2018? Well, drawing from the scores of op-eds, tweets, news stories, and other first drafts of Not Yet History, Politico magazine penned its sixth annual Worst Predictions list. Their notorious list includes 17 faux pas, ours just 10 of them. First up, number 10. Stephen Kinzer of the Boston Globe predicted by the end of 2019, the President of the United States will be Nancy Pelosi. Well, even as Speaker Pelosi flexed her power this year, she remains third in line to the Oval Office behind the existing president and vice president, no closer to becoming president than she was at the start of 2019. Stop predicting, Stephen. Number nine. Excuse me. The Syria withdrawal probably won't happen in anything more than a cosmetic sense. Predicted by Demir Murasik of the American Interest. That's a magazine and podcast. Now, as we know, the U.S. withdrawal from Syria in 2019 that allowed Turkey to decimate the Kurdish population and Russia to make major advances in the country, including taking over American military installations, marked more than a cosmetic change in Middle East policy. In short, stop predicting, Demir. Number eight, President Trump will resign from office before he can be impeached, citing health reasons. Predicted by John Cooper, a big Democratic fundraiser. Cooper's been prone to outlandish statements before that rack up retweets from his fellow partisans, and this is sure one of the best, or shall we say, worst. Stop predicting, John. Number seven, retiring U.S. Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah predicted that House Democrats and Senate Republicans will secure a number of legislative victories and meet on middle ground. You know, it's become so routine for legislation that passes the House to get held up in the Senate that Nancy Pelosi has dubbed Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's chamber the graveyard for legislation. As for bipartisan successes, very, very few. Stop predicting, Orrin. Number six, related to number seven, in its annual crystal ball forecast for the year ahead, Fortune magazine imagined Mitch McConnell and Nancy Pelosi working together to pass a farm bill, immigration reform, and an infrastructure bill that President Trump has long wanted to see on his desk. Well, immigration reform shows no sign of life, and major investments in infrastructure remained unrealized, to say the least. Fortune magazine, stop predicting. Number five, Mueller will exonerate Trump, implicate the deep state, and forever legitimize his presidency. Predicted by Bill Mitchell, host of Your Voice America podcast. Well, not only did special counsel Robert Mueller not exonerate Trump, he said, if we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. Come on, Bill, stop predicting. Number four, excuse me, Trump will nominate Jared Kushner for Attorney General, predicted by Carl Lubsdorf of the Dallas Morning News. Pardon me. Well, when Trump went about finding a successor for Attorney General Jeff Sessions, he could have chose Jared. He's a graduate of New York University School of Law, whose legal experience largely consists of two internships. Instead, the president chose former Attorney General William Barr. Come on, Carl. Stop predicting. All right. Number three, House Democrats will not impeach Trump, predicted by, among several others, political pundits Peter Dow, Kai Ryssdal, and Stephen Carter. In short, they did. That is, the House Democrats did impeach the president. Stop predicting, guys. Number two, Prime Minister Theresa May will see out Brexit and then depart on our own terms and timing. It's predicted by Nick Williams, head of issues and public affairs at a UK advertising firm. British PM Theresa May announced that she would resign as Prime Minister in May, after the Brexit plans she negotiated were defeated in Parliament for the third time in as many months. She stepped down as Prime Minister in July, and of course was succeeded by Boris Johnson. Stop predicting, Nick. And, ladies and gentlemen, number one, and in my mind, the most bizarre prediction of last year, President Trump predicted that Alabama would be hit by Hurricane Dorian, despite what the National Weather Service said. If you remember, in advance of Dorian making landfall, Trump tweeted that in addition to Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, and Alabama will most likely be hit much harder than anticipated. Well, there were never any reputable weather maps that had Alabama in the direct path of the storm, and the National Weather Service in Birmingham quickly issued a statement correcting the president. Whoops. Guess the hurricane never did hit the state. Stop predicting, Mr. President. And while you're at it, stop tweeting, too. Now, my own and only prediction for 2019, actually for 2020, that financial survival will come to you each and every Monday through Friday, featuring our blend of truth and honesty. And ladies and gentlemen, that is this year's first Levity is Golden. Okay, well, how do we follow up on that? Let's talk about resolutions for the new year. That is, new financial goals. Now, I'm not normally a big New Year's resolution kind of guy, but a lot of Americans are. So if you're starting off the new decade with a list of resolutions, why not consider adding some financial to-dos if you haven't already? 49% of Americans want to save money, more money in 2020. Another third want to improve their credit score, and 31% plan on creating a personal budget. That's according to an Experian poll on the top financial resolutions for the new year. Now, of course, determining your goals is a great starting point to improving your finance. The next step after that is to take action. Here, then, are the top 10 financial New Year's resolutions from Experian's study. Their advice on how you can achieve them can be found on our Facebook page at DGS Coins. That's the at sign, DGS Coins, one word. These aren't in any particular order, but number one, save more. Unsurprisingly, the top financial resolution is to save more money. There are countless ways to go about this, increasing your 401k contributions, opening up or adding to a precious metals IRA with gold and silver, and of course, cutting back on unnecessary spending. Number two, improve your credit score. If you have a less than stellar credit, that is a score below 700, make it a priority to try and raise it in 2020. You can improve your credit score in numerous ways, including paying your bills on time and in full, and that may include setting up auto pay, paying off debt, and, again, cutting back on spending. Number three, create a personal budget. A clear budget can help you set guidelines for what you can afford to spend and can also help you identify areas where you could cut back. Four, pay off a credit card entirely. About 61% of Americans have a credit card, and cardholders carry an average balance of almost $6,200. If you have credit card debt, consider consolidating it on a balance transfer credit card, which offer no interest for up to 21 months. Simply Google balance or zero interest balance transfer credit cards. Five, pay your credit card debt on time. While balance transfers can help you get out of debt, you get the most debt benefit if you pay off your balance before the intro period ends. Once you know when your 0% APR period ends, create a plan to make significant payments toward your debt throughout the intro period so you're on track to be debt-free by the time it ends. Many of those 0% deals, if you don't pay the entire principal off on time, that card, the bank funding that card, will charge the full 17, 21, 25% on the entire initial balance until it's paid off. All right, six, pay your full credit card balance each month. Payment history is the most important factor of your credit score, and you know, it makes it essential to pay your balance on time and in full every month. Seven, sort of a no-brainer, don't open any more credit cards. The average American has four. Every time you apply for a credit card, whether you're approved or denied, the card issuer pulls your credit report. And that knocks your credit score down, sometimes 5, 10, on occasionally more. These inquiries, again, affect your credit score negatively, but it will bounce back over time. Eight, check your credit score more often. That's self-explanatory. Nine, check your credit report more often. It's important to regularly check your credit report so you can spot fraud and ensure that the correct information is reported to the credit bureaus, the three main ones, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. And certainly, last but not least, sign up for a credit monitoring or identity theft protection product. You know, those services can help alert you again of possible fraud, although they do come with monthly costs. If you don't want to pay for credit monitoring services, there are free services available, such as CreditWise from Capital One. By the way, there's one glaring omission from this list that should be at the top of your list. Invest in more gold and silver. Hey, it's already January 3rd. If you haven't already gotten started, what are you waiting for? Get on with it today. All right, as we approach another break, let's talk about Americans' drinking habits. Americans are drinking less beer, encouraged by trends like Dry January. But brewers like Molson Coors Beverage and Heineken are trying to use the month-long sobriety challenge to promote their beer. Dry January started in the UK in 2013. Since then, the movement has spread worldwide, including the U.S., where overall alcohol consumption continues to fall. Over one-fifth of Americans participated in Dry January last year. That's according to Nielsen, and some consumers who are dubbed sober curious are also making an effort to reduce their alcohol intake during the other 11 months of the year. That shift, as well as competition from other kinds of alcohol, is hitting beer companies hard. U.S. beer volumes declined by 1.6% in 2018. That's according to the IWSR. That firm, which tracks alcohol trends, found that cider and hard seltzers are taking share from beer. Younger consumers are drinking less overall, including beer. But all hope's not lost, for brewers, that is. Know and low alcohol beer is the fifth fastest growing type of beer in the U.S. The most frequent consumers of those products, they're between 21 and 44 years old and male. Go figure. Well, I'm going to figure also that we're up for another break. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a few short minutes.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And once again, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. I owned a hot tub for about 15 years. We left it behind when we sold our house and moved to another location. But some of my fondest memories came on clear nights, late at night, throughout various times of the year. You know, all year long, as Earth revolves around the sun, it passes through streams of cosmic debris. The resulting meteor showers can light up night skies from dusk to dawn. And if you're lucky enough, like I was over the years, you might be able to catch a glimpse. In fact, the next shower you might be able to see is known as the Quadrantids. They're active now through next Friday, the 10th. And their show peaks actually tonight into Saturday morning. So if you got clear skies wherever you are, tonight's a good night. You'll have to Google or look for information on the Quadrantids to see the best time and parts of the sky to look at. I don't have that in front of me. Now, compared with other meteor showers, the Quadrantids are unusual because they're thought to have originated from an asteroid. They tend to be fainter with fewer streaks in the sky than others you might be able to see. If you do spot a meteor shower, what you're usually seeing is an icy comet's leftovers that crash into the Earth's atmosphere. Comets, they say, are sort of like dirty snowballs. As they travel through the solar system, they leave behind a dusty trail of rocks and ice that lingers in space long after they leave. And when Earth passes through these cascades of comet waste, the bits of debris, which can be as small as grains of sand, pierce the sky at such speeds that they burst, creating a celestial fireworks display. A general rule of thumb with meteor showers, you're never watching the Earth cross into remnants from a comet's most recent orbit. Interestingly, instead, the burning bits come from previous passes. For example, during the Perseid meteor shower, you're seeing meteors ejected from when its parent comet, the comet Swift-Tuttle, visited in 1862 or earlier, not from its most recent past in 1992. That's because it takes time for the debris from a comet's orbit to drift into a position where it intersects with Earth's orbit. The best way to see a meteor shower is to get to a location that has a clear view of the entire night sky. Ideally, that's somewhere with dark skies, away from city lights and traffic. To maximize your chances of catching the show, look for a spot that offers a wide and unobstructed view. Bits and pieces of meteor showers are visible for a certain period of time, but they really peak visibly from dusk to dawn on only a given few days. Tonight is one of them for the Quadrantids. Meteor showers could vary in their peak times also, with some reaching their maximums for only a few hours and others for several nights. Showers tend to be most visible after midnight and again before dawn. So good luck if you get out there and you're able to see some of the Quadrantids. It really is fascinating. When Seattle began raising its minimum wage 5 years ago, local burgers joint Dick's Drive-In experienced an unintended effect. It's reported that Dick's employees opted to work fewer hours as their wages rose. Certainly a tall order for the owner in a tight labor market. Jasmine Donovan, who's president of Dick's, said, "We thought with higher wages it'd be easier to get people to take more hours, but it's been just the opposite." She added that the company has had to raise prices for the first time in its history because of the cost of labor alone, whereas in the past, food costs tended to drive such hikes. Now, Seattle's law, which gradually increased its minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2021, from just over $9 an hour in 2014, is now at the forefront of an ongoing national debate about the impacts of these kinds of wage increases. It comes at a time when top Democratic presidential candidates are calling for a $15 per hour federal minimum wage as they try to appeal to working class voters. Federal minimum wage is currently $7.25 an hour and hasn't been increased in over a decade. Now, businesses like Dick's have seen their costs go up. Dick's pays above the minimum wage, with some locations starting workers at $17 and even $18 an hour, and most workers are students in their 20s. Benefits like 401k plans and health insurance are also available to their workers, regardless of the number of hours worked. But higher minimum wages citywide pressure employers to increase pay, even if they're already above that threshold, and that's in order to compete for talent. Meanwhile, the Seattle law has been life-changing for workers like Martin Johnson, who lobbied for higher pay with the advocacy group Working Washington. He works three minimum wage jobs as a temporary cook on game days at the city stadiums, as a janitor at Costco in the overnight shift, and as a handyman in his own small business. The raise brought with it more dignity for workers and boosted morale, he said. Instead of being paid $9 an hour, you're getting $15 an hour to do the same work. You feel better about yourself. You feel appreciated, Johnson said. Overall, implications for businesses and workers alike have been nuanced. While there are benefits for workers who saw higher pay, others may have seen fewer hours. Some businesses flourished, others struggled in the face of greater regulation and intense competition in Seattle's hot economy. Studies of the effects of the Seattle wage hike have had different findings. One 2017 University of Washington study found that while wages went up, hours worked declined, resulting in less overall pay for low-wage workers. But a follow-up study published just last year, the same authors noted that this wasn't the case for everyone, and experienced workers in low-wage jobs actually saw their earnings rise. Another study from researchers at the University of California, Berkeley, which was released in 2018, found that the wage hikes increased pay and have not led to job losses. Now, of course, the Berkeley and Washington studies measured different groups of workers with varying results. The conflicting studies highlight a broader debate about what a $15 federal minimum wage might do for businesses and workers nationwide. Fed Chair Jerome Powell even touched on the issue during his testimony before the House of Representatives this summer, saying there's no consensus among economists who are all over the place on this. Well, one of the challenges of measuring Seattle's experience with the minimum wage is that the city's economy happens to be in a period of sustained and robust growth. Since the wage increase began in 2015, Seattle-Tacoma's job growth has slightly outpaced the state of Washington's as a whole at almost 13%. The city's population has increased 13% over the same period. Average hourly earnings were $39.38 in October. That's an increase of 14.5% from the same month in 2015. Of course, prompting a question, are higher wages necessary due to the hot economy, or is the economy continued to grow due to higher pay? Pardon me. Listen to this. Fire and Vine has long paid above the minimum wage in the front and back of house due to demand for talent in the market and the company's belief on professional pay. It's a bar restaurant. The company moved to a commission-based model with a 20% service charge for diners. So servers are paid out an hourly wage and a 15% commission and can make $70 an hour or more in the Seattle market. That's up from $45 not too long ago. Guests can also leave extra tips for servers if desired. That's in addition to their 20% service charge. Those in the back of house, like dishwashers, begin between $17 and $20 an hour. That's 40% more than where they were before. Now, the wage increases haven't hurt the Fire and Vine business. It's nearly doubled in size. 600 workers today with 12 locations under management during a time when other restaurants, a lot of them, have closed their doors. But while some businesses have thrived, others have faced challenges in the face of Seattle's changing economy. Matt Dillon, owner of Sitka and Spruce, says another restaurant, says he believes the minimum wage should be much higher than $15 an hour, which is why he also pays his workers above that threshold. But when his lease came up, the James Beard Award-winning chef decided it was time to close his door after more than a decade in business, serving the restaurant's last dinner on New Year's Eve, passing off costs to customers in an environment where his rent was $16,000 a month and where both food and labor costs are also on the rise, just felt unsustainable. It's an issue Eric Tanaka is also contending with. He's a partner at Tom Douglas Seattle Kitchen. He says the group also decided not to renew a lease for a building that houses three of its restaurants. Moving forward, Tanaka says he may consider less labor-intensive models, as well as concept and menu tweaks. Within the group's different businesses, as costs have gone up and talent can be tough to find in the city. Company pays above minimum wage and offers benefits for those working more than 25 hours a week. It recently settled a class action suit with its employees over the service fee charges to customers. He said, I think we start to look at future planning. We're definitely looking at restaurant models that take less labor. Interesting development. We'll keep you abreast of any other studies and anecdotal evidence about this very controversial and timely issue. Now, a group of Amazon employees say the company has threatened to fire two workers for speaking out against the company's environmental policies. In a statement, Amazon Employees for Climate Justice said that several employees were contacted by legal and human resource representatives who said they were in violation of the company's external communications policy. Those two employees were told their roles would be terminated if they continued to speak out about Amazon's business. Maren Costa, who's a user experience designer at Amazon, was one of the employees Amazon threatened. In a statement, Costa said, "This is not the time to shoot the messengers. This is not the time to silence those who are speaking out." Now, Amazon also reportedly threatened to terminate Jamie Kowalski, who's a software development engineer. Both Kowalski and Costa said they received letters from one of Amazon's lawyers after speaking out in October. In the statement, the employee group claimed that Amazon changed its policy in September and that the updated policy requires employees to seek prior approval to speak about Amazon in any public forum while identifying as an employee. Interesting. At Amazon's shareholders meeting in May, thousands of employees submitted a proposal asking CEO Jeff Bezos to develop a comprehensive climate change plan and reduce its carbon footprint, although it was ultimately rejected. In September, Bezos announced that Amazon aims to rely on renewable energy entirely by 2030 and to have net zero carbon emissions by 2040. The plans were largely viewed as a response to employee demands. Although the day after Bezos' announcement, more than 1,000 employees walked off the job as part of a strike to protest Amazon's policies. Look, ladies and gentlemen, regardless of how you feel about climate change, global warming, call it what you wish, here's an example of a huge corporation trying to shut down the basic speech of some of its presumably lower level employees. Are you telling me that poor old big Amazon is too sensitive to take one on the chin from a few of its employees? Regardless of the employees breaking company policy, Amazon could just as easily have responded to the complaints with a press release or a simple tweet pointing to its long-term climate goals. On the other hand, it's probably also fair to say here's a case where employees who wish to speak out against their company's policy perhaps need to be a tad more discreet to stay within the bounds of the policy they're bound to. In either case, firing these two employees, I think, would be a big mistake. The fire is still burning in Australia, and far too many people, it sounds like, are not heeding officials' warnings to get the heck out. Don't know how much you've read about this. We are running out of time. With concern of more fires, even tourists are being asked to leave the area. The roads to several towns there are unpassable. Trees down, embers still burning. Fires now ring much of Australia's east and southeastern coasts. Well, that's all the time we have for today's show. I'll be back on Monday. On behalf of Melody, thank you so much for listening. I'm Dave Allen. Have a good, healthy, and contemplative weekend. Bye-bye. I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of Clear Digital Audio, 22,500 miles above the planet, this is the Global Star Radio Network.